Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy, with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome back, everyone. On this episode, a conversation with former major leaguer Chris Dickerson, who's been incredibly active with some important issues since ending a 15-year professional baseball career that ended in 2017 and included parts of two seasons with the New York Yankees. Dickerson has taken on a number of pursuits in his post-playing days aimed at bettering both the game he loves and the world around him. As the leader of Players for the Planet, Dickerson is helping players get involved in the protection of natural resources and other conservation efforts, which he says is about more than just being green. He recently led a group of several star players, including Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, and Wander Franco, on a beach cleanup mission in the Dominican Republic, which was featured on Good Morning America and other outlets. As part of More Than Baseball, Dickerson, who played in almost three times as many minor league games as he did major league games, is trying to help the plight of minor leaguers whose meager salaries and living conditions came more into focus in 2021. As part of the Players Alliance, Dickerson has worked closely with Curtis Granderson and other African-American players to broaden their participation in both playing and running the game at the professional level. Some form of coaching might still be in his future, as he recently reached out to his former manager in Baltimore, Buck Showalter, about future possibilities with Showalter's new team, the New York Mets. And of some relevance to the game right now, Dickerson also had experience with the Players Union's executive board, serving on that committee for each of the previous two CBA negotiations prior to this one. So we get his perspective on how those negotiations shaped where the game is today and what can be done about it. All this and more in this conversation with Chris Dickerson. Chris, first thing I want to ask you is Players for the Planet describes its mission as working to unite all athletes to bring lasting and measurable transformation to the earth. That's a mouthful, and it's quite a
Sounds good, doesn't it?
And it's quite ambitious for a former Major League Baseball player. So how and why did this become your project?
It's interesting when you get that read back to you, what that mission statement entails and what the weight of it is. And, we did the rebrand 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, I think we only had a handful of players, probably maybe only 30 or 40 players. And it was in a particular time where I was just getting out of the game and trying to rebuild it and kind of understanding what the potential was, as opposed to, you know, where we're at now and understand and being in the middle of the full potential. And when I started this in 2008, you know, I just wanted to make a program, do my own part to bring together individuals, like-minded individuals, such as myself, professional athletes that we're looking to do to make a change and to encourage and inspire others for best practices when it comes to the environmental responsibility. And so, you know, it started out with 10 guys and, you know, they're all just like local SoCal buddies, you know, Jeff Jenkins, Chase Utley, Ryan Braun, Matt and Jack Castle. And, just kind of establishing that there is, you know, that there is a movement, that we, the idea that we can use our platform as professional athletes for good. And this was before social media, which was, you know, unlocks the true power of, social movements and being able to share and generate content and education awareness around some of these issues. So, you know, we're kind of on the upswing, you know, right now. And a large part of that was our beach cleanup in the Dominican Republic and having Robinson Cano, having Nelson Cruz, and having that influence within baseball. And that was basically kind of like the peak moment of the embodiment of that statement that you just said, is to bring together athletes to unify under, you know, a common goal or a common banner to preserve our natural environment. And since that day, we've had such an enormous increase in athlete participation, obviously within Major League Baseball, but now branching out to the NHL, to NWSL, to the NFL. You know, it's really has been quite the journey, and what these guys have been able to accomplish in 2021, Tony Kemp, Paul DeJong, Nelson Cruz, you know, as far as what they've done off the field with their environmental initiatives has been inspiring to watch them, their commitment, their enthusiasm, and their dedication to the cause and to their community has been, it's been pretty amazing to watch.
Chris, this is not an easy sell to a young professional athlete. You know, you were this person once, but you had to have singular focus, and you're focused, you know, you're focusing on your career, which eventually entails making a lot of money and doing all the fun things you can do with that. How do you get young success? You mentioned some really good players and people are making a lot of money, successful young athletes. How are you convincing young players that this is a cause that they should not only care about, but be involved in to that extent?
Well, you know, it's easy. It's probably easier now than it's ever been before, because you have to understand that when I started this in 2008, 2009, you know, going green, it was just a buzzword. It was like a corporate buzzword, like, oh, go green, you know, use a reusable bag and, you know, drive an electric car and all this stuff. It was like, okay, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, there's so many, it's so complex and it's so vast as to what the issues are. And now this generation has seen the lack of action those 10 years in which I, the first 10 years that I started it, to where now you're getting these athletes that are like, oh my God, if we really don't do something, we're going to be left with this enormous problem. And this is going to be my life. This is our generation's life. This is what we're going to inherit. And I think that has been the sole reason for this revelation in this younger generation, these minor league players, these college student athletes that are studying environmental science, you know, while they're playing baseball, while they're playing lacrosse. And when they get to that professional level, being able to join the ranks of other professional athletes that are working towards a common goal. And so when I get these emails from these young kids and these young players, they're so far ahead of the curve from even where I was in 2008. They've studied this, they've volunteered with that, they've worked with this group in their, you know, this conservation group in their own, you know, their own hometown in the off season. So it's getting these voices on board is really been interesting to watch, because I feel like there's a true sense of urgency as opposed to some of the old school guys. And with that, you know, at the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, you do have old school guys like the Evan Longorias, like, you know, like even Curtis, but in that span from 2008, having kids and becoming a parent and seeing and being able to travel and seeing the benefits of being environmentally responsible in other countries are, you know, when traveling with Curtis in Europe and in Holland and Paris and all these places, he's like, dude, this is how it's supposed to be done. And seeing Evan now that he has three kids, you know, planting trees and trying to instill environmental values to his kids on why it's important to protect the planet. So it's really interesting.
You know, this might be a little bit of a reach, so tell me if it is, but your cleanup in the DR, your beach cleanup in the DR got, you know, you were on Good Morning America with this, you know, you got some good pub out of this. So people are reaching, but what you're talking about, you know, there's, is it maybe easier for some of the ball players, Dominican and other Latin American countries, who have started to make some money but came from poor backgrounds? Is it easier for them to get involved here and try to, you know, do some good in their areas, in their hometowns, and places that are still maybe poverty stricken? And, you know, listen, Roberto Clemente is from Puerto Rico, but his influence in the Latin American community overall is huge. And I'm wondering if all of that kind of plays into their willingness to help you in this cause.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, speaking of large contracts, you know, I told you the story of seeing Wander Franco, you know, at eight o'clock in the morning at the Interceptor before we departed for the ocean cleanup tour. And he had just finished inking his, you know, 12-year deal. So, but having guys in Nelson with who have made hundreds of millions of dollars in their career and be able to come together and draw a framework to how we can help these impoverished areas. How can we give them access, what the programs in place can look like and where some of that money can go. And it's no secret to where, you know, what Nelson has done with his money, you know, Roberto Clemente award winner, you know, he basically bought his entire hometown, you know, a fire station, you know, the PPE supplies, the medical care that he's provided. So these guys understand the benefit of giving back to the community, but more so just having that veteran presence within the country, within the community of baseball and Dominican players to look to these beacons of hope and understanding that they can replicate that when they do get these deals. So hopefully when you show up and you have a Wander Franco standing next in the middle of a Cano and a Nelson Cruz, you know, chances are they're in good hands and they're leading by example is ultimately what we want. And having Luis Urias, you know, come out to the cleanup and Willie Adames, all this new generation being able to look up to the guys that preceded them and their efforts to give back to the community, to address the plastic pollution, to address access, to address education. So it's a very exciting time right now.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Notice one of your other endeavors, more than baseball, includes Slade Heathcott, who was part of Players for the Planet. And I talked to Slade a couple of years ago about more than baseball and what his mission is, which is basically, you know, making lives better for minor league players. We know all the costs they incur, how hard it can be before you make any real money in the major leagues. Now, it was viewed as a victory, I think, Chris, that major league teams are now going to have to provide the housing for minor league players. But was it a real victory? Did it come at a cost? Because they basically slashed a bunch of minor league teams and they're saving money on certain teams. And now, you know, is a real victory because there are now fewer minor league players to actually worry about.
You know, it's obviously a highly debated conversation and in concept. You know, you talk about the surplus of minor league players. I mean, if you talk about, you know, 30 rounds of guys, yeah, it's great for it to give more opportunities, but a lot of those, you know, players do end up kind of being roster fillers and repeating in lower leagues. And it's not necessarily part of, you know, the competition where they're really excelling at a major league level. So in that regard, you have that percentage that, you know, don't have the skill set that is attractive to the major league pro, you know, major league teams and the higher levels. So condensing that down gives you a more concentrated talent base and maybe even higher turnover, to where those kids that do struggle in those lower leagues, you know, they're going to have the opportunity, but it's going to go through the draft league to really assess if their baseball journey is going to continue. So with that being said, but with the players that do, that are in the system, you know, it's so incredibly difficult. I mean, you know, living with four or five guys in the same place, and looking at the numbers, making $2,500 a month for six months is absolutely insanity. And the fact that they phrase it as, I believe they call it seasonal interns, yeah, which is such a slap in the face, trying to compare professional baseball players playing at this high level, taking 12-hour bus rides, 12-hour bus rides and playing, you know, double headers in Chattanooga, Tennessee in the middle of summer, and then spending, 12, 13 hours at the field is not a seasonal intern. So that is, it's kind of, it's demeaning to a sense. And to pay people like that because of the effort is so great, from these players to try to excel and get to the next level. And that housing, it's difficult. You know, some of these places, they do have reserve housing that players have stayed in the past, but other than that, not everybody is going to be on the same level. You know, you have 40 men, you know, guys on the 40 man roster where it is a little bit easier, but other than that, you know, you play in some of these cities that might be a little bit more expensive. Like, you know, sure, you rent is like $1,800 in like, Chattanooga, Tennessee for a 2-bedroom apartment. But, at that rate, you're going to have 3 roommates. I love the organization because it's bringing awareness to the plight, the true plight of the minor league player. The financial struggles that they have, and there have been several players, really talented players that even I played with in the Arizona Fall League that, had to retire because they simply couldn't make, that money. And, they had professional decisions to make. Either they have job operators where they can step out and make 6 figures, start a family and have some security, or keep making, $2,500, $12,000 a year and really struggling. So having that barrier of entry to that next phase of your life, which is starting a family and having some, security. So it's an incredibly important group that I'm proud to be a part of. And I hope that it continues to grow and there's more attention and there are more amenities and not necessarily amenities, but more commitment, more of a financial commitment to these minor leaguers, resources from, transitioning out of baseball to transitioning in and just kind of keeping track of that professional journey.
And I think it's important to remember, kind of call you a former professional baseball player, not just former major league baseball player. Certainly there are people listening here who were Yankee fans who remember your name, right? And you play with a couple other teams too, but you played in a little over 350 major league games in a professional career that lasted 15 years. I know they were concentrated in a few years, but on average, your professional career, you played 21 big league games a year. And it made me think of Crash Davis describing his 21 glorious days in the big leagues. So, and telling all these minor league kids about what it was like to play in the big leagues for just that one brief time. Was the contrast that stark to you because you spent so much time in the minors and spotted time in the big leagues? Did it feel like a big gap to you every time you went up and down from majors to minors?
Yeah, it's enormous. And that really hadn't happened until I got New York. I came up in, a crowded system in Cincinnati. And, Joey, me and Jay kind of coming up within, months apart. Joey in 2007 as part of a September call-up. Jay, the first part of 08, and then me coming in 09 as a result of the Adam Dunn and Griffey trade. So, it was really crowded. And I often wonder what how that would have been expedited. Starting my big league career would have been expedited, you know, before that, if I was in a different organization. But besides that, when I did get called up, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, and then, you know, going to the Yankees in 2011, I had never been back. So I had three consecutive years where I've never had to go back. So, you know, when I was traded over there, that was the first time that I really experienced having to go up and back and forth. And that was tough because it is stark. And I remember the first time that I went to Scranton, I was depressed. You know, my mom was there and I remember I was close to tears because I hated playing in Scranton. I couldn't believe that I was back there after three and a half years of playing in the big leagues. And, you know, Scranton is not the greatest place to play. It was at the old stadium. It was just kind of a miserable, a place to be in. And I had to get over it, and it ended up carrying over, you know, into, you know, my play on the field is just, you know, kind of going through the motions and, mentally and physically, taking those bus rides and eating, you know, the food and, you know, those getaway days where you're eating pizza and you're getting leftovers from the concession stand. I mean, it's a stark contrast in realities in how minor leaguers are treated as opposed to big leaguers. You know, you go to New York and you have a seafood tower and, you know, we're in, you're in, you know, Syracuse, New York, eating, you know, chicken sandwiches from, you know, from the concession stand. So it's wildly, wildly different. And it's, you know, it's not something that I enjoyed, but after a while you mature and you understand that you have a single job to do, and that's to get the hell out of there as soon as possible. And with that being said, your focus becomes more intense on what you can do to fill those gaps and to get back. And whether that's, and a lot of that stuff is out of your control too. You know, there may not be a spot, obviously coming back in New York, they picked up Ichiro and then the next year, Raul, and having that veteran presence. So that was, a tough pill to swallow, but, you know, I understood that when I was with the big league club, you know, simply I just, you know, played my ass off. And I think that's what a lot of the Yankees fans respected, is that, you know, my time there, I, you know, tried to play with my hair, you know, like my hair was on fire. And, you know, so you adopt and you relish in the experience of, you know, being in the big leagues, and do your best to get out of the minor leagues as much as possible. But yeah, it's an incredibly stark contrast going back and forth and looking back, and then towards the end of my career and finishing in 17, you know, in the minor leagues. And ultimately it was so bad that I was just like, I cannot go back. At this point, I simply do not wish to go through minor league baseball and, you know, showing up to another minor league stadium at my age and with limited facilities to get ready, limited resources to get treatment, to get ready and to sustain yourself throughout an entire season. And ultimately, so yeah, that is the answer. The stark contrast is ultimately what led me to be like, okay, I'm done. I can't do another minor league stint again.
Even through all that ups and downs of a professional career, I mean, you talked about how early in your career that you latched on to Players for the Planet and this idea. We're talking about more than baseball. So your time as like activist is still, you know, you're still kind of supercharged by all this, even though some of the baseball parts can drag you up and down depending on how the career is going. And along those lines, you're part of the Players Alliance too. And I know that some of the guys you played with in New York are part of this, like Curtis Granderson, Cincy Sabathia. I want to read for everybody what, you know, the vision of the Players Alliance, how this reads on your website. It says, "We seek equal opportunity in our game for the Black community at every level, from the field to the front office, to combat racial prejudice and ensure a future for our sport that provides a level playing field for all." Now, it didn't just occur to everybody in 2020, but a greater light shined on it because of things that happened in 2020. Have you seen growth? Have you seen progress? Have you seen the things that you guys talked about and wanted to accomplish with Players Alliance? Has there been any real progress yet?
Yeah, I absolutely. I think there's, you know, by putting the wheels in motion, I think there's a greater urge to unite communities of color with, within baseball, and to get them equal access and seeing the response from the teams, the major league teams, to continue to support the programming and extend the programming into some of these, untouched resources or untapped resources in these untouched communities within these major league markets. But just the conversation around profiling and promoting the image of Black baseball in the country has grown significantly since we started doing the Players Alliance. And I think in time will tell to see what the lasting effect is as, we've made these tours throughout the country, providing baseball equipment. And I think ultimately what happens there is to monitor the follow-up, how many more kids have been involved in baseball programs, how many more have picked up, were picked up in leagues and playing travel baseball and getting opportunities within the game and the front office as, we continue along with this journey. So I think in 2 years' time, I think we'll have a better understanding from a quantifiable place to see exactly what the result of this beginning of this program. But, moving forward, I think with the plans, is they're tremendous as far as how do we really shine a spotlight on this amazing talent around the country that not only on the baseball field but in the classroom and being getting opportunities in the front office through the diversity program and the MLB diversity pipeline is identifying these places in all these different areas in which MLB can help support, and then guiding these individuals into the funnel of some of these systems to gain access to some of these positions. And ultimately that's what we wanted, and that's what's happening. And it's excellent.
The part of the goal isn't just getting Black players involved in playing the game, but obviously you mentioned, front office positions, coaching, managing, but it seems like that's getting harder to accomplish, and maybe even more so because Major League Baseball playing experience is no longer a prerequisite for getting a coaching job or a managing job. So as you see where these positions are going, listen, you hear people say you have to see it to believe it, right? Whether you're talking about Kim Ang as a general manager or Rachel Balcovic as a hitting coach, or first as hitting coach, as a minor league manager in the Yankees organization, you have to see an example of it. That's getting harder to do. Is the idea that they're looking for people who aren't necessarily the traditional types of coaches anymore or managers, is that hurting this effort because there are fewer Black players playing to begin with, and now you're going to all these other places, and it seems to be fewer avenues to get to these jobs you're talking about?
You know what? That is a theory that Curtis and I talked about one time. It's like, if you look at the journey of most Black players, especially the great ones, there's such a small population of players, that the players that do go on usually end up having 10, 12 year big league careers. I mean, they're stars. You talk about, the Edwin Jacksons, the Cameron Maybins, the, Torrey Hunters, like they're stars in the game. And when you have 13, 14 year careers, you don't really want to go back into the game and manage, and you see a lot of, you see a lot of catchers getting managerial positions. There's not a whole lot. There hasn't been a Black catcher since Charles Johnson. Yeah. So the great minds, in the game are catchers. And that's not necessarily a position that most people take off. And you're already talking about, tending to such an incredibly small sample size of kids that have of color that are even playing baseball in the first place. So that is a very difficult thing, but when talking about getting into sports coming out of college, if there's an opportunity there for individuals to pursue positions in sports, that's there, because there's no shortage of kids at HBCU programs that are going to come out looking for positions in sports. That's great, but we do need to increase the on-field presence in youth baseball, in college baseball, and ultimately, like, that's going to happen, because that is the avenue. And like you said, it's not necessarily a prerequisite. So I think that's one of the things that's going to have to be talked about, is like how What are the coaching development programs? Like how, even if these, you know, these kids of color that don't make it to the big leagues, that don't have the resume and are interested in getting into coaching, what is that journey and how can we help provide those resources to get into the game, to become minor league, you know, coordinators, to become hitting coaches, infield coaches, roving coordinators, or into the analytics department. So, you know, the problem is vast. It's complex. And, you know, luckily, you know, over time, it's something that we'll get to. It's not going to be, it's not going to be immediate. You know, this whole process is a marathon. You know, it's not a sprint. We're not automatically going to solve every, you know, every hole in, you know, every hole in this, in the issue. So, but that's a great point. And it's something that we're, I know we're looking forward to attending to.
Chris, one of the other interesting things on your resume is that you were for two different CBA negotiations, a member of the Players Association's executive board. And you went through a couple of negotiations that did not end in disputes or work stoppages, but they were pretty significant, I think, to why we are where we are now. 2012 and 2017 both kind of led us here. Based on the victories that the owners won over the players in those two negotiations. And the first thing I really want to ask you about it is, did you know at the time, were you aware at the time that the owners had taken a little bit more control away from the players and were, and you were heading in this direction eventually?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, starting in 2012, I mean, these bargaining agreements never, you know, go off without a hitch. I mean, obviously there's always disagreement, but 2012 was, you know, was a seemingly decent year. I think going into it, every bargaining agreement is basically like a call to arms, in the sense that I know that they, you know, when we get our checks back, you know, a lot of that, a lot of the money is withheld in the case that we go into a bargaining agreement and they have to have the operating capital in a lockout. So, you know, it's interesting when we get our checks and they're kind of, you know, they're basically partial checks is because they're basically withholding emergency funds in the case, you know, that we're exactly where we're at now. And in 2017, you know, that was, you know, looking at the international draft, looking at the, you know, the luxury tax, especially the competitive balance, that's when things really started to get chippy. And that was the 1 year, I think the culmination of that, you know, up in the ballroom, as I told you, at 3:45, 4 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, having Tony come in and say, hey, you know, be prepared if this doesn't happen, you know, and he looked around the room and said, you know, you guys take care of yourselves, you know, kind of calling to, you know, this collection, this collective, this family aspect. We're like, okay, you know, when this happens, just be prepared to support each other. However you seem fit. And that was, you know, as you can imagine, that was a huge raise of the eyebrow. And that essentially set the stage for this bargaining agreement in which we knew that it would probably result in a lockout or a very, you know, a dirty fight. And that's exactly what this has been, you know, 2020. We saw that. We saw the beginning of that. And I think it's just been, inevitable, honestly. When we had that, you know, the leaked files, the leaked comments about, you know, what's going on in the league office and how players are responding to it. And, you know, the we're ready to play campaign. It was already, there was so much friction going into this. And now here we are, we're back to the table. And, you know, looking back, you know, we talked about this yesterday, you know, maybe it wasn't necessary to talk, you know, to have the media in there, to put time limits on the media in the clubhouse, or have the extra seat on the bus, or have the, you know, the after game and, you know, the after game and engagement and, you know, looking at the rights to equipment and memorabilia, all stuff that the team can take. And, you know, which is exactly is some of those things that, you know, that we lost, is where they can essentially just come into our locker and take our stuff with, you know, with no announcement, and have, you know, and then have that to be sold on MLB auction sites and team sites. So taking that from, you know, taking that identity and that property, the name, the likeness, away and gaining more control over that. That was an issue. And so these issues started to compound in understanding the amount of power and the amount of control that's been taken away over seemingly small issues, where we really should have gone for the jugular. And I remember talking to Daniel Murphy, and he's just so, you know, just the passion in which he speaks about how much we gave up in the media rights and the personal appearance, the personal involvement, the control, and the duties and the responsibilities to MLB that should be focused on player and players association support to grow and to benefit the player side as opposed to the corporation. And so, you know, now we're here and the free agent thing, and this has again been a long time coming, and this is part of the trend of baseball and the phasing out of older players and individuals based on these metric systems. And this data, the collection of data that can then be used against you in free agency. And that's exactly what we saw 2014, 2015 in Toronto, 2016. This became an issue because of the wearables, and the wearables knowing that this could then be used against you in negotiations or, you know, free agency, because they have collected so much data on your performance that they can then use this in arbitration and be like, hey, listen, you're actually slowing down, you're actually doing this. So again, getting control and, you know, diminishing the wearables, you know, programs that were, you know, being done by, you know, strength and conditioning programs. You know, that was a big thing, is to not give them any more leverage to have in this battle against free agency and this contracts. And so, you know, we talked about this earlier, is that now the control from when you get into the system, the 6 years that you're under control, to the arbitration, and in which they're clearly, you know, tampering with that as well. As we know, we've seen all these high profile prospects being held back in April and May to avoid the Super 2. And now we're looking at the prime career, when you're going in your 30, 31, 31, 32, which is now considered old by some means, in an effort to not, to minimize the payment structure for free agency. And that is, you know, going into the wallet and basically affecting not only just your job and your longevity in the game, but also, you know, your personal financial well-being. And that's a big one.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Chris, how much was this a focus just amongst the players themselves? I mean, were you guys telling each other, we're giving away too much and we're focusing on too much on things like the meals in the clubhouse and the extra this, the seat on the bus? Were you guys fighting amongst each other 5 years ago that you were giving away too many big picture things in order for more personal, comfortable type of things?
Yeah, in retrospect, I don't think there was really disagreement. I didn't, I don't think there was ever like the tension to where you have like two sides of the board and you're probably like imagining, like Democrats or Republicans shouting across the aisle at each other. But, I definitely think those concerns, the meals were actually a big one just because of the vast discrepancies in clubhouse meals and the nutrition provided is a big issue. You spend close to 11 hours at the field. You eat three of your meals at the stadium. So if you go into a Cincinnati and they have, they have tacos and Skyline chili dogs before, like that's unacceptable. So, shoring that up, was a big deal, but like you said, some of the other things are, they're just, they're peripheral, not necessarily what we really need to be focusing on, knowing that this machine of Major League Baseball was going to keep moving forward and trying to find opportunities to gain back that control. And now we're faced with this uphill battle to where it's going to be a difficult needle to move.
My goal in asking you this isn't to make you choose one over the other, but I'm just curious to see what you think is a bigger issue. The team's not spending at the bottom and tanking, or the team's not spending at the top because of luxury tax concerns, even though the game is flush with money and they're drawing their own line because of the way the tax structure operates. Which is one of those a bigger concern to you than the other?
Yeah, I think it's, it differs at the bottom because, like I said, it's like, a perfect example is, you have Pittsburgh, Tampa, Oakland, in San Diego for a portion of time there, Kansas City, where, they've been regulars in the bottom five. But then, out of nowhere, you have a team like San Diego that claims they don't have the money and they go on a spending spree that hasn't been seen, by the likes. It hasn't been seen since since the Yankees or even the Dodgers. And so that is proof that these teams, that oftentimes some of these teams are withholding. And so that's very frustrating to where teams can basically kind of, say they're going to revamp and they're going to, they're going to do a revamp year, but then all of a sudden can find, are flush with cash to go out on free agent spending sprees. And then on the contrary, you do have teams like Tampa that are going to consistently suffer because of attendance, because of their own logistical issues. Marlins Park in Tampa being where it is and, the low attendance and be able to generate that revenue that can be then translated into free agency purchases. And then in Oakland, and it's kind of like you look at these, it's a lot of facility based, the Marlins being where they are not be able to attract, have a consistent fan base, and Tampa being essentially like out in the middle of nowhere, but nowhere near anybody that really wants to get to a game, even though that they're one of the most exciting teams in baseball every year. And they're being able to put together these incredible teams with, by their bootstraps. And then Oakland, watching it go see Tony Kemp play on a Wednesday game in Oakland was just, it's rough. There's like 9,000 people there. So, but all of these teams thrive through their minor league system. And now you have these owners that feel like they're not responsible for the investment into the minor league or into the scouting, into the facilities in the minor leagues. And that's a big problem, is where these teams are thriving with the minor league personnel and the coaching and the philosophies that are making these teams contenders, despite low payroll and revenue resources, that they're now, starting this, this narrative within the owners that they shouldn't be responsible. And so that again is a really big issue that we're up against. And, you have teams that are openly comfortable with not spending. You know, Colorado was six in attendance last year. They didn't spend anything, but they understand because of, again, the importance of the venue is that they just simply generate a ton of revenue because people, it's, you know, it's considered like the largest outdoor bar in the country because it's the most, one of the most beautiful stadiums in the country. And regardless, people want to come out and enjoy the scenery, being in Denver, the sunshine, the air, you know, the view, it's beautiful. So not having to spend, they're still going to make, you know, they're still going to make their money regardless of the product that they put on the field because of the atmosphere that they have at the stadium. And, you know, like I said, it's complex, it's incredibly complex. And, you know, it's, you know, and it's unfortunate they got to a point of no return and then seeing the delay and the unwillingness to reconvene over some of these issues and the abbreviated session that happened where I believe it was, you know, it was like a 25-minute session and they came back with their proposal and simply shut it down. So it, I mean, it's rough, man. It's rough.
By the time there's going to be hopefully a little bit more movement. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And obviously, yeah. And you said it yesterday, you know, the luxury tax, essentially you're subsidizing these, you know, these low payroll teams to, you know, to increase, you know, their talent profile, increase their resources. And, you know, ultimately those teams are going to, those are going to be the same teams that are going to come back and beat you. But, you know, where this at, you know, we can't, you know, that's been long agreed is that we can't keep having, you know, LA and New York, you know, go on the, you know, with these spending wars. And, but, you know, like I said, you know, we have the bottom five that are looking for resources from the city and the facilities to draw fans that will then help them compete and get out of that bottom five. And then you have the top teams that simply are going to continue to, you know, just through the equity of the club and the organization are going to continue to make, you know, continue to make revenue despite what they put on the field. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Chris, I've got one more for you. We've talked a lot here about all the different things you're involved in, from, you know, areas of social change, your involvement in the union while you were a player. We've talked about trying to provide opportunities for African-Americans in coaching and scouting and managing, things like that. I mean, general manager, is there something you want to do in this game? You know, you're still only a couple of years removed from your playing days and you're a young man and you still have a future in something that you want to do. Clearly you have a passion for the environmental things that you're involved in and you're getting a lot of work done there and putting a lot of time and energy into that. But is there something in the game that you would like to be involved in more?
Yeah. And this is a conversation I actually had with Buck a couple weeks ago. I reached out to Buck a couple weeks ago because we hadn't talked in a couple months. And I usually still check in with him from time to time because he's just always been one of my favorite people. One of my all-time favorite baseball minds. You know, there's, you know, everybody knows that Buck's going to give it to you. He's going to give it to you straight. And that's something that I always respect from him, but he's also, you know, he's just an incredibly amusing guy. So, you know, I sent him kind of a holiday message, congratulating him on the Mets job. And, you know, it's something that we don't always discuss is what my journey was going to be after baseball, as far as coaching. It's something that I had pursued and I had looked into with the Yankees as far as like a coordinator job. But again, going back to that minor league question, getting out of the game, you do not, going back into that minor league life is just something that I wasn't prepared to do. And that's kind of, you know, it's a lonely thing out there. You know, you're on the road 20 days, going to A ball, going to AA, going to AAA, you know, throughout the month, you know, you're back on the road in some of these minor league cities. And so that's just not something where I was at, but, you know, ultimately I would love to get back into the game. You know, I think, I realized that doing, you know, some of the work on MLB Network, but you know, that is something that I want to do. And doing the diamond demos with, you know, with Billy Ripken and doing it with Harold, it definitely incites something in you. I'll be honest with you. And that's something that, you know, that Buck and I discussed is, you know, what his coaching staff is going to look like. And if there were, maybe it was an opportunity, and he said he was still trying to filter out some things. So I'm not sure what's going to come of it, but it's something that I have been open to, especially seeing, you know, my old teammates, Brett Hayes, my college roommate, you know, becoming the bullpen coach in Texas and seeing how that has come to fruition for Kevin, you know, when Kevin Cash, when he was in Pawtucket with Boston, to having him as a bullpen coach in Cleveland, to then immediately getting a managerial job coming straight out of a bullpen coach. So seeing Sam Fuld become a GM, Gabe become a, you know, a head coach, all these guys that we've had very similar, you know, careers with, you know, we weren't necessarily superstars, but we were, you know, versatile and, you know, really, you know, versatile defender, you know, defenders and just kind of, you know, baseball players. And so, you know, the thoughts crossed my mind, you know, I'm not going to lie. So where that goes, who knows, but, you know, right now I'm just focused on, you know, providing opportunities, you know, in both the environmental side and, you know, and getting kids of color to play this game. And hopefully, you know, maybe I can be one of those examples, you know, is seeing is believing, is to have, you know, more coaches and more people in the front office. I did interview for the, you know, the VP of corporate responsibility. And so that was a big thing for me is because, you know, of diversity and to show more people, to give more people an example of getting into, you know, the game of baseball and getting into sports, you know, so.
It's all out there for you.
Fortunately. Yeah. Been very fortunate to have, you know, great role models that have gone on to do great things, in this game and, you know, having my mom and my parents be both, you know, executives in corporate America, understanding the importance of diversity and broadening your horizons for life off the field.
My thanks again to former major leaguer, Chris Dickerson. You can check out the websites for Players for the Planet and More Than Baseball to read more about their missions and how you can help. If you're new here, be sure to check out the 30 with Murdy archive at Odyssey or Apple Podcasts. You can go back to hear my conversation with Rico Bronya, the former Mets and Phillies first baseman, who's part of the CBA negotiations during the 1994-95 strike, and last year was manager in the Oakland A's system, where he witnessed firsthand what advantages a pitch clock can make on the pace of play. Also, check out my conversation with screenwriter and filmmaker Andrew Bergman for some fun stories about his classic comedies like Fletch and Blazing Saddles, and many more. Make sure to hit subscribe and review and all that jazz. Also, be sure to check out WFAN's Baseball Insiders, thoughts from Ed Coleman and me on the Hall of Fame voting in the most recent episode. You can find that, too, at Odyssey and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, I'm Sweeney Murdy. Thanks for listening.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.